Honey, You're Ruining Our Kid, the parenting podcast, the zero judgment parenting podcast, is back. We apologize right away for the, kind of randomness of when this podcast appears.
Yeah, I hate that. But we're only a week late. I mean, that's good for us.
Yeah, only a week late. We've been all over the world in the meantime. Yeah. The big shout out to everybody who came out to the tour in Boston, New York, and Philly. It was unbelievable to do those cities in quick succession. It was bananas. Just back to back to back shows. And then back here, absolutely exhausted afterwards, but full of observations of what we saw in terms of kids over there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's so many kids everywhere. There just seemed to be children everywhere we went.
And was it spring break? I don't know what was going on.
I think it was spring break, but one of the weirdest things, and most notable, like it stood out, was the lack of screens, lack of iPads, lack of phones with little kids. Like,
particularly in Boston.
Particularly in Boston, yeah. But like, it was really exciting to see, but it was so, so normal that it seemed weird. It seemed like eerie. Because you're so used to seeing it here, like kids in prams on a screen. Like, I hate seeing it, but I'm always trying to not judge it because I know people are just trying to survive. But we know it's really bad for your kid. Like, so bad for them. And like, here we are in restaurants. No, people are bringing out the little toys, the little books.
The highlight of Tina's trip was sitting on a train on the way from New York to Boston.
Yeah.
Two little girls. The seats are comprised of two seats by the window and then one on the other side. And we had bumped up to business class for that luxurious experience. And
but
I had
also
done it.
We had no choice because we had bags.
Yeah, and I had done it in such a wonderful way that I'd arranged for us not to have a window. So just
window.
Looking at a piece of metal.
On one of the most scenic train journeys ever. We couldn't. We were
couldn't
like
see out the window.
We were like standing up, looking at it.
No air conditioning
windows.
On this particular seat either. So really, the one thing that I organised on the trip was the trains, and
still cool
but
though.
I did let
the trains
Tina
were so
observe
cool.
The two little girls sitting in front of us.
Oh my God, they were gorgeous.
One next to her mom and the other left on the other side, trying to convince the younger that this was actually a better seat.
But the younger was so glick. Like, she was so, like, street smart or something. Like, I'd imagine their ages were 3 and maybe 6.
I would have said more like 7 and 10.
You're so wrong on that. Oh my gosh, you're so wrong.
Well, they're playing with dolls. They had the Barbie set up.
They had so many
toys.
There
was no sign of a screen. Like,
no
this is what was amazing
again.
Was they didn't even ask for it. Like Tina said, I don't judge anybody for putting their kid on a screen, particularly on a journey like that.
Yeah.
There has to be a moment when you go, right, it's bluey time.
And to be fair, the mom was on her computer the whole time, but she was working.
Yeah.
She was working.
But the spa setup that this kid had set up for Barbie and Ken. Yeah. She didn't actually have Ken until she convinced the younger one to give Ken
well,
over.
Well, the dynamics of the two of them was hilarious because, like, there was a moment where the older sister realized that she could do something different with the fold-out tray in her chair. And she was so excited to make this discovery. She kind of said it to her younger sister, who answered back with, yeah, of course I knew that already. It was so funny.
But
I love them.
She was in her element.
Yeah, but
just
like,
observing
they
kids.
They played for 3 hours. And the imagination of these games and the little, you know, they drew picture books. It was just wonderful. But anyway, they were not the, what's the word, exception.
Hmm.
We were seeing this everywhere. Like, we were not seeing kids being put on screens. Now, sometimes we were seeing kids who weren't being put on screens with the worst behavior we've ever seen.
I would have given that child a screen myself.
Yeah, proper tantrums. But still, those parents didn't do that. And I was like, is this America being
know.
Like it was when we were in the 80s, just being that little bit ahead of us in terms of what's coming next?
They were into the yoga before anyone else.
But
they were running around.
It was pretty positive to see.
Yeah, I loved overhearing conversations. The conversations you overhear with kids and their parents in Ireland are very different to the ones you hear over there. Like the parent walking along with the two kids hand in hand.
Oh,
going,
yeah.
I don't know what she meant or wanted by that.
It was so funny because...
And like, the two kids were like, yeah.
But like they
what
were...
What was the
they
intention?
They were barely one.
Barely.
Like, and she was kind of giving out to one kid about the other kid. And I was like...
So
you
strange.
Were, you were like... co-parenting or something. There's something unhealthy here. Like, you're
I don't know, but you made a brilliant observation about how boys are raised and how girls are raised. That these girls were on their on their little scooters.
Well, it wasn't an observation; it was an opinion. Because I'm not sure if it's if I can put that as an observation.
Well, let's hear what it is first. The observation was that we assume a lot of intelligence on the part of girls to figure shit out. When we have little girls, we're like, she'll figure it out. That's where you get these young, independent little ladies who march into the room while their dad is doing an interview on BBC News.
Yeah, because we saw these two girls on their scooters, and like the mom wasn't worried about them at all.
They figured out.
And it was more like I was trying to figure out a joke. Like, I wasn't making like an educated observation.
It's definitely
going to
be a joke at some point, but the point is that the lads are much more like, now he will... He will not know what to do there, so you have to hold his hand.
I don't know why there were so many toddlers where we were, but like it was just seeing again and again little girls being allowed to be independent and little boys being like, oh, he'll ruin
put
this.
His coat on him or he'll put it
he's
on
going
wrong.
He's going to crease himself now. I have to hold his hand at all times. It was so
but it
funny.
Would explain why you get an awful lot of young lads who are like, Mom, make my sandwiches.
The little
you
girls.
You get a lot of little girls going... I cook the dinner. I know it's a mess.
Jarlett has a niece who's like the most wonderful little girl. Mm. Oh my God. She is on it. She is like, she's
the
ready.
Head of the house.
She could completely go out to work right now and make her own living. Like she's.
I mean, I'm very careful about talking about anybody's kids specifically, but she is a superstar. This kid. Maybe send us in a couple of your stories with how much of a superstar rather than how much of a problem your child is. That might be make a change. We got superstar of the week,
oh,
kid.
Well, you know.
But, definitely. Little Claro is the superstar of the week in my eyes. Tina, what do we got on the agenda in terms of questions?
Well, we have sensory room issues at school. We have clinginess and we have bedtime.
Bedtime. Yeah. I mean, does the bedtime thing ever go away? My sleep has been enhanced massively since coming back from America, thanks to a couple of melatonin gummies. Why, oh, why are they not selling these over this side of the Atlantic Ocean?
It was so funny, though.
They are unbelievable, these ones. A couple of jellies before you go to bed. And I mean... According to my Whoop, I am 85% recovered every single morning on 6 hours sleep. You heard that correctly. 6 hours sleep, boom, 85% recovered.
Yeah, but it was hilarious because you're not allowed to have these tablets in Ireland.
No.
And when we were coming through customs at the Dublin airport,
oh my God.
It was so funny because the customs people called Jarlett over and he's like freaking out because his bag is full of melatonin, but they just wanted to say hello. I've never seen him panic.
Panic.
You totally panicked.
Yeah.
It was so funny because they were just like,
I do be watching the videos.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was like, oh my God, I've got loads of melatonin in my bag.
Dear Tina, leaves Jarlath out, fully understand anytime anybody messages in and is like, listen, I need an answer from Tina. Jar, get out of the way. My child has, let's just say, some tricky behaviors. I have been working with them for a very long time, helping them throughout the day at being less demanding and less prone to going into a full-blown tantrum. Last week, his teacher suggested a sensory diet, and I guess... Having listened to the podcast, alarm bells went off because I connect that with my child being, inverted commas, special. I know that's some old language that I'm using there, but I'm really afraid of him being othered by the other children. I thought I'd email in straight away so that maybe you can assuage my fears and perhaps the fears of other parents in a similar situation. Absolutely adore the podcast. Please help.
Okay, well... Thank you so much for trusting us with this, first of all. I totally, totally understand where this person is coming from because we're so lucky now that all these educational environments have sensory rooms. But we have to be so careful of how that time is being allotted and how it's being dealt out in the classroom and how, because children in the classroom are aware of everything and that stuff should be private, shouldn't be announced to the class that any kid is going to the sensory room. There should just be time when that kid gets taken away by the teacher or the teaching assistant and they go and do their exercises there without anyone knowing. And that's the most important thing you need to go back to your teacher with, to make sure that your kid's privacy is respected. Like just last week, we went to an amazing book festival. It was incredible. And I'm not shaming the school here. I won't mention the school's name. But I find myself in the staff room and I'm like loving it, being in the staff room and all. But they hadn't remembered to put all the individual education plans, either take them down or turn them around. So luckily we got them first. And I guess it's just being a teacher and respecting every kid's privacy is really important, because the first thing I did was turn them around, because I was like, strangers are going to be in this room. Nobody deserves to know anything about these kids. And it's the same for your child with the sensory room. There's nothing to be ashamed of. But still, kids can be very othering. And if the sensory room is only being given to kids who are, you know, demonstrating like tricky behaviors in class, a stigmatization, yeah, is that the right word, will grow no matter what. So it's really important it's private. But if you're lucky enough and the sensory room is for everyone in the school, which I believe it should be, then it's just somewhere that every kid looks forward to going.
Yeah, and look, you're also bringing to it your own bias.
Yeah.
Because we all remember,
yeah,
that one kid who needed to be taken out for extra reading help.
Yes.
And, you know, and I certainly never bullied that kid, but definitely everyone knew, oh, that's him.
Yeah, and that's awful. And I don't think that happens that much anymore. I think teachers they really try to make
some
sure that
some.
There's a lot of respect for kids now and stuff. But what I wanted to say in this, right, there's a lot of confusion with these sensory diets, right? First of all, they're so important for every child. Every child will benefit from having a sensory diet, but some kids need them more than others. And you need to be careful that your school's actually doing it properly. Like, if they're just using the sensory room for your kid to go and run around and have crazy time, that's a waste of time. And what they're actually doing is your kid's going to come back worse than they went. Yeah. You have to be so careful, because there's calming exercises, and then there's, you know, what's the word? Escalation exercises. So what I did was, right, I looked through this. And just so I'd have the right words, and of course, every single child has an individual sensory profile, and that in turn helps the teacher and the person who's going to carry out the sensory diet with them understand what senses are we working with. Because, like, I know for me, my ears are something I find really tricky. I struggle with my auditory input.
And that's why you don't like me doing these accents.
I don't like any noises and
Anytime
stuff.
Anytime I try and do an English accent, Tina's very much
it makes me so sad.
I'm going to kill
it. Irritates
you.
Me on a level I can never explain to you. And I think that's
bloody
what people
accent,
people don't understand, is that it's the irritation that causes the kid to act out. Because they're like, oh, how do I make this stop? So there's 7 parts to this, right? And every kid requires different alerting or calming exercises to be done within their sensory diet. So
just mind that wire there.
Sorry. So the first word, which I just can't get my mouth to wrap around this morning. How would you say that?
Proprioception.
Yeah, proprioception. I just couldn't do that. Right. That's probably the most important one for every single child. And that is just about how the body's ability to sense its own position within the environment, okay? So that would be like, if you've noticed your kid is doing a lot of shuffling or throwing himself against stuff, that kid probably needs to go to the sensory room and do a lot of pulling and pushing exercises, do a lot of like squeezing, getting the big exercise ball and rolling it on top of him. Like, he needs to calm that energy down. Brushing, all that kind of stuff. Then there's the oh my God, what is wrong with me today?
Vestibular.
Vestibular. What is wrong with me? Can you edit that out?
I can't
pronounce any more words. And this is the inner ear that controls balance, orientation, and movement coordination. And like, that's when you see a lot of kids up on their tiptoes and things like that. So they need lots of grounding exercises, you know. And then you've got the tactile. We all know that. I myself probably have a few of those where I cannot cope with the idea of feeling a label on a garment. Garment makes me want to vomit. So I have a lot of understanding for these children. As Charlotte knows, there's so
is
many.
Is there overcoming that, though? Could you have...
I think
like,
you
if
lived...
that is the
I
way
think,
you feel in your 40s, like, could you have
Well, I'm doing a lot. Excuse me. I'm doing so much better than 30s, when I was a child. 30s. I don't mind being in my 40s, but I'm definitely, I think what you're always only ever going to be able to help these kids with is coping with it.
Mm.
And then finding ways for them to feel like this is not the worst thing that can happen to me today. I can cope with this. Then you've got the auditory. So obviously that is hearing noises directly in the ear, the sensation of needing to, you know, cover their ears. You know, sometimes a classroom can be so overstimulating for those kids and there's zero understanding for that. So sometimes just some time in the sensory room with some Enya on in the background, some bubbles, some of those nice rice toys shaking down. That can be really nice. And then the olfactory smell. And I have to say, I don't think I have needs.
Well, you used to have.
But I definitely, since starting my menopause, I am struggling with a lot of these things.
Right.
And I think that's why a lot of people my age end up getting a diagnosis. Because I think if I was to go and get a diagnosis, I'd probably get one right now, even though I know I don't have it. I just know that I'm going through some stuff.
You used to be a smellochondriac.
Yes. And
that's what I called it.
Certain smells will, I will be repulsed. So I'll need to vomit. Jarla has seen this happen.
Smellochondria, for those of you that aren't familiar with that term, is where a person smells something and then immediately think that they're responsible for that smell.
One of my biggest fears is someone saying to me, "Oh my God, Tina, you smell." I would die.
We'd be in like extra vision. Oh my God, I think somebody's
done a shit
in here. Somebody probably farted. But it's also
extravision has such a throwback.
Smell castrophization.
Oh yeah,
you go to the worst possible cause of this.
Yeah,
that like it smells like there's a dead body back there.
Oh yeah, it smells like dead people is something I used to say a lot. But then I got COVID.
Your breath smells like dead people is
To me. I'm sorry, honey. I have said that to you a few times.
I just had a cup of coffee.
You haven't done anything about it. I'm joking.
Welcome to my life.
But when I got COVID a few years ago, I got COVID so bad. Oh my goodness, it was terrifying. But anyway, I lived to tell the tale. And
I don't remember that.
I had a week, Jarlett and Mikey had a week away from me.
We had a great week.
Oh
my God.
They watched.
Night.
They had so much
fun. We dropped our food the other time.
I don't know what. Oh my God. I actually had to start. You just reminded me. I had to get my neighbors to call in and say, you haven't fed Tina.
It's a separate podcast about how tough Tina's life is. Go on.
Anyway, I was lucky. I qualified for the antivirals. They saved my life. It's all good.
Okay.
But I lost my sense of smell. And so now.
That was good.
Now it's really weird because I don't have that constant, oh my God, the world smells like shit all the time. But the odd time, I will get a smell of something and it'll ruin my week. I will not be able to get through
and
it.
And I can't even reference it then. What was that smell? Don't mention it.
Yeah, so Gerald's putting up with a lot. But what I am saying is that normally what happens is the teacher should send home a list of questions that deal with all these senses for the parents to fill out with their child. Then they bring back this questionnaire to the teacher and she uses this to make a sensory diet of exercises that will help this child. Now you can look this stuff up online. It's super easy because most children will benefit from doing these exercises in their own home before they go to school.
Yeah.
The sensory rooms are great, but I'm not confident they're being used the way they should be. I think there's a lot of messing going on in those rooms.
What's the first thing you need this woman to go in and say to the teacher now that this message has been sent?
You definitely make sure this sensory diet is done properly. Make sure you get that questionnaire and that you go through it with your kid and you talk about all these things and your kid. It's actually really good for your kid to consciously think about the things because these things could be setting your kid off and they don't even know.
What's
you know you're
on?
Helping them figure out, oh okay, that does upset me a lot and I can't control myself when that happens, or that does make me feel hyper and I can't feel like I calm down. And then once they have the keys to these exercises, you can do them at home. You can do them for yourself. Like, they benefit everyone. But also, the most thing, I guess I did go off on a tangent there, I'm so sorry, is to make sure that it's not public news at school.
Mm.
And if they're going to the sensory room isn't a reward. It's not a positive reinforcement. It's part of their education and learning. It shouldn't be somewhere where they're like, oh yeah, I get to skive now. It's supposed to be somewhere they do their exercises in a very calm way with a grown-up, not somewhere they get to go and dick about. And I think a lot of schools are using it as a space to let kids go into and dick about. Yeah. And I might get a lot of shade for that, but I wish I was wrong.
Yeah. So how do you stop them from doing that if they say, oh, it's just we're going to be taking them in and, you know, he'll just get to have some fun.
Well, you got to tell them, well, then I'd rather do these exercises at home, because we both know they won't work in an environment like that. He needs to go in. He or she needs to go in there and do exactly what is on their sensory diet. A sensory diet is basically, you know, when your coach gives you a list of exercises to
do. A load of drills for running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sometimes that is just meditation, but that meditation will help that kid enormously for the rest of the day with their coping.
Why not get in touch with us? honeyyouruiningourkid@gmail.com. If you have some input on this topic of sensory diets, how did you manage it when it was being run in your school? And do you agree with Tina? Are some of these rooms being used as escalation rooms rather than de-escalation sensory?
I do have to say, I am sorry. I get that the first few times you bring the kid there, you actually have to make it that they want to come back.
Yeah, familiarize them with them, make it fun.
But just be careful of that. Yeah. You know, I do get the first few times you'll have to be like, this is a space they actually want to come to. Yeah. But it is important that they get out of it what it's designed for. It's not designed for them to go in and just throw themselves
Maybe
against the wall.
Maybe sensory gym is a better name for the sensory room, because you go in and you do your exercises and you leave.
Mm.
Just a little thought there. Throw that in. My two-year-old son normally goes to bed relatively easily at 7 p.m. and sleeps through to about 6 a.m. Over the last 3 days, it has gotten harder and harder to put him to sleep. For two nights, it took 2 hours to get him to settle. Last night, things peaked and he refused completely. It went on for hours. This has never happened before. Finally, at 11 p.m, I brought him into our room and he slept until 6 a.m. He kept screaming, "Mommy, Mommy, Mommy." That's my impression.
When you're tired,
I'm assuming that's what he's doing. He has become extra clingy to me of late and tells my husband, go away, bye bye. He is in daycare full time. And we have a 5-month-old girl. Gradually, I've been doing nearly all of his bath and bedtime routine. Is this separation anxiety? Any thoughts on what I could do? Thanks very much. Love the pod.
Okay, so I'm sitting a bit further back because my breathing's particularly bad today. So I'm worried it is.
Go on.
I did a lung function test there 2 weeks ago, and the guy liked me at the start and hated me at the end because I can't breathe anymore.
What's the lung function test? That you blow into the thing and the ball goes into the air? That's it?
Well, no, it's not like that anymore. It's a computerized thing now.
Computers are taking over.
Computers are taking over the world.
What would the computer know?
But I can't breathe, and I'm sorry. I'm trying my best to breathe and talk at the same
time. Nobody even noticed it until you said it.
Okay, sorry. Well, I don't know enough about this, but my intuition tells me...
Don't know enough about this kid?
Yeah, the kid and the situation. Right. My intuition tells me the 5-month-old has gotten a little bit more awake to the world. Mm. The 5-month-old is probably entertaining the family a little bit more than they were. Mm. And the 5-month-old is not being sent off to daycare full time.
No.
And I'd imagine there's a tiny bit of him saying, what the fuck is going on here? What
How
the
is
fuck?
This fair?
Why am I being outsourced? And look, what the mom's not doing anything wrong. She has an availability to send him off to childcare for the day. That is great. He's getting hopefully cared for really well. He's socializing and he's probably, you know, hopefully learning a few different things and gaining independence. What age did she say was he in? 2? Yeah, I think it was 2. I think
that was it, yeah.
The night nighttime thing is pretty normal for a 2-year-old to start causing a tiny bit of a fuss. I mean, the bedtime routine is never, ever, ever going to stay the same. In fact, sometimes the minute you have like a few days or you even consciously think, wow, bedtime's really good at the moment, that's it. It's done. bedtime's about to
start. Jinxed it.
Yeah, because it changes all the time. He probably has back teeth coming in, which would be annoying him, but I'd imagine he's a little bit like, just feeling a little bit, I want to see mummy at nighttime too. You know, she said when she brought him in, he settled and he stayed in the room. Like, these kids are so clever. They observe everything. They're awake to the world. They know.
Yeah, no,
the baby's getting a lot of attention.
It is, no.
I would say you have such a good bedtime routine going. Just change it up a little bit. You know, bring something into his room, even if it's new bed sheets that are very special for him. A new storybook. And I think maybe now it's time for a music light. They work brilliantly, where once you've done story and you've given a kiss, you tell them, okay, I'm putting on your music box now. The light, you don't have to turn on the light, but sometimes there's lights on the ceiling so you can watch the pictures, or you can listen to the music and pop off to sleep. Sometimes just a change like that can help them resettle into a new routine of sleeping.
This parent's really jumped on it quick, though, because this has only happened in the last 3 days.
And it is it's a bit quick, but it shows how tired that poor mom must be.
Yeah, but she's worried that the pattern is taking hold now. And that is the thing. It's like, how many times as a parent do you think, oh no,
yes,
is this going to be my life?
And she's right to think that, because we don't know how she's dealt with the times when he has acted out now at night times. So depending on the amount of attention he got for that, the bigger he's going to go the next time, because he's going to want the attention back.
I want to ask a question. Is the 5 month old, when's the 5 month old going to bed? Because if the 5 month old is staying up to get a night feed, it can feel completely unfair.
Yeah, but I'm not going to give the mom any grief about that, because...
Not giving her grief.
No, but I mean, she's not going to be able to put their bedtimes together. She's got a great routine going with the two-year-old. She's going to figure out the little one. She can't really change that up too much, because that baby's still small, still needs to be fed at different times. You know, sleeping a lot during the day, they're probably better off putting her to bed a bit later with them. I mean, yeah, the kid has noticed. I don't know, is the kid... Maybe is there a way of making the two-year-old less conscious of the fact that he's going to bed and his little sister isn't?
My intuition, right, as the non-trained behaviourist here, would be that this little dude needs to be made feel like you're actually really special because you're the big guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a nice idea. But
and
also...
what he's pining for, and what I think you see a lot of, is the older sibling... wanting to be babyish and wanting more babying, whereas if it was like, well, we're getting to do and maybe incorporating stuff into the day that's like, this is just for you because I know I can trust you and you're not a baby.
Yeah, like we sometimes say that it's not the worst idea to say to the 2 or 3 year old, I know things are harder now that the baby's here. And it's not that you're bitching about the baby, it's that you're reaching them with the empathy they need to hear, because they're finding it really hard.
Team up and demonize the child.
You always do that to me, but that is not what I'm saying.
No, that's not what you're saying.
But I really...
But it does sound fun to be like, I'm so fucking baby. I didn't even want a baby.
But I do think just changing up the space, the bedroom space, making it more special, making it your bigger boy now, this is for you, you know, the books.
Turn it into a granny flat.
That can really help.
Yeah, you make making it a place he wants to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, what she has to do is stick to whatever she plans to do. He started pushing back. He's not going to give up on pushing back that quickly, because pushing back always works at the start. So as long as she's consistent and, you know, when he wakes up, she gives him the hug he needs, she says goodnight, she puts him back to bed. Very, very hard for a woman who has a 5 month old
to
have the energy to keep doing that. But if she can, that will work.
I have no clue how any of you are doing it. We have one child and it was a lot.
It was a lot. But then I was very unwell as well. Like, I have my illness and I wasn't well either. So, you know. But
I mean, like, these people that have multiple...
It's unbelievable.
Like, I remember Seth Meyers' joke about, you've never met parents more chilled out than parents with 5 kids. Like, a bomb could go off in the other room and they're like, they're figured out. Whereas you're chasing one of your kids around trying to stop them from hitting their head off the corner of the coffee table. I get very overwhelmed, and I feel for this mom in this question, because she's panicking as the thought of how overwhelming this is. Yeah. Like, I get days where, and our kid's 15 now, and I get days where I'm so overwhelmed I just don't want to be out in the world at all. I'm just like...
Yeah, but that's not just... You can't blame our kid for that. That's just your personality.
Yeah, it's more just like how much we've on at the moment. And this is half the reason this podcast is so sporadic at the moment.
Well, we've worked out the only way you can do a podcast is if you're married to the co-host, because you don't have time otherwise.
Multiple marriages and gay marriages. We'll have a lot of podcasts. So final words for this mom or anyone who's struggling with a similar situation of a kid that suddenly started being clingy and won't go to bed is to rejig that room that they're going to sleep in, number one.
Well, the routine she is going is brilliant. So you can completely understand why she's panicking. But you will get that back. Just develop your new plan and be consistent. Acknowledge that, okay, I've given him attention for this behavior. That's okay. That's done now. It only takes 4 days to break that pattern. I'm not saying to be mean. You just do less talking. You do the hugging, returning to bed, telling them they're a great lad. You're going to need to do that a few times. And honestly, if you've got a little bambino at the same time, do what you can. But if you're able to stick with it, it will work.
And make sure to quietly bitch to the older kid about what an inconvenience this baby has been.
You know that's not what I mean.
I think I deserve a bit of credit for across this tour, which is now, we're 30 dates into the tour. There's another 20 to go before our summer break. You can get tickets at jigsaw.com/gigs. I am coming to England, the UK, Derry, Glasgow, Birmingham, Newcastle. And I haven't, Tina, at any point across the tour, thrown a single tantrum.
I don't think that's true. I think when we were in New York, the people working the show...
Are you kidding me? You think that was not a justified tantrum?
Oh, I think you were justified, but...
I didn't throw a tantrum, right, number one.
True, you should have.
Like, I simmered with absolute rage.
I have so many videos of... Well, like, they
were filming the whole thing.
I was, yeah.
So basically, the show is so simple.
It's so simple. But this happens so much.
Like the show is basically the only musical and sound cues in it. If you come and see the show, they'll just be like, it's just a show. It's just music on.
Yeah.
Walk out, introduce yourself, and on you go, and we do 90 minutes of comedy. Like... getting the microphone on, to be on at the side of the stage. You would think you're on Broadway.
Yeah, but you would...
It's
even worse than that, because part of my job is emailing and corresponding with the sound and light technicians for weeks and weeks and weeks before these shows.
Back and forth. So then what?
And then I'll go to the trouble of actually... giving them line to line, beat to beat, the whole show, so that there's nothing that is a surprise. Then I'll check in a few days before. Is this all still in place? Have you got any questions for me? Everything's all fine. I'll check in the day of the show. Everything's all fine. And 9 out of 10 times we'll get there and they have not read it.
Well, who are you talking to up to this point? Like, I always think that, like, the people that you were talking to are suddenly not working that night.
Yeah.
Or the people that are there are like, no, they never passed on that email.
Yeah.
So now we have to go through it all again.
And soundcheck is only supposed to be half an hour.
But they always act like this is a huge inconvenience. I can't believe that you're asking for
walk
this.
On and walk
it's like up. you had a stage show in here. You had a panto on
it. It's the lack of respect for the comedian, though, because we know from doing the shows, all these bits matter so much. Because all you want the whole time is for the audience to be relaxed and buzzing and having a good time. You don't for a moment want them to be like, what's going on?
It sounds like you were closer to having the tantrum than me.
Yeah.
But well, anyway, this did. I was joking. I haven't thrown a single tantrum across the tour. I get when I see a kid throwing a tantrum, I get how good that must feel to just vent it all sometimes.
I don't know, because you just know they're going to have a little headache for the rest of the day.
But these rage rooms are a real thing now where you can go in and trash the place. You get goggles, you get overalls, you get a baseball bat. And I would say there's plenty of parents listening to this now are like, yeah, sign me up. Whereabouts is this?
See, I don't get the rage room thing, and I think that's my Catholic guilt upbringing.
You wouldn't like to break that stuff.
I couldn't break it without feeling bad. Yeah, so I'd leave feeling worse about
you're
myself.
You're just helping with recycling.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you, though?
Well, our final question today is about tantrums. A lovely email this week, and we always get emails from you guys. We do our very best to reply to them. We've just been overwhelmed with emails.
Well, we did tell them on the last episode that I will try and reply to as many on air, but it's really hard for me to keep up with.
Just trying to reiterate that point that, you know, if it doesn't get dealt with on air, we're doing our level best, okay? Because there's an awful lot of them coming in. Love the podcast. Thank you so much for all the work that you do. It's fascinating to listen to and feel less alone in this parentscape. I have a 22-month-old daughter who is the best crack. She's just starting to get to the age now that when she is told no, if something is not allowed, or more importantly, not safe, she just starts thrashing and screaming, usually repeating whatever it is that she wants. Door open, coat off, get out of the car seat. I usually try to distract her, but it feels like that's getting harder now. Also have tried letting her thrash it out and then offering a hug when she's done. I hate having to force her to do anything. It just seems wrong to overpower her, though sometimes I have to, i.e. getting into the buggy or the car seat. What is the best way to handle this kind of tantrum? I would also love if you could recommend some reading material around boundaries and discipline for toddlers. Ooh. It's literally your specialist subject. This is right up your street.
Well, yeah, like...
Well, we'll get to the reading later, but let's talk about the tantrum. It says, she says right from the start, she's getting to the age where, is there an age?
Yeah, well, we all know this. It used to be the terrible twos, but now it's the terrible threes. So it's like this period between 2 to 4. And what is it really? It's just the kid trying to assert their own independence, their own choice, their own wants and their own needs. And there's a particular period of order they're going through. They have this massive sense of what is order in their life, how things should be. And as grown-ups, we tend to not really understand how high that sensitivity for order is in a 3 to 6 year old or a 2 to 5 year old. There's this period of it where they're particularly sensitive. So you can set a child that age off over very little. Like, you know, if you don't put the cushion back on the couch where they think the cushion could be, that could upset them. If you cut their sausages in half and they wanted their sausages to be one. I mean, there are lots of
this
things.
This is one of the tantrums from earlier in the tour. Yeah. Cut my sausages in half.
But like, it all seems so small to us, but it is so big to them because they had it in their mind. It's like if... apologies to any men listening right now, but for me, the only way I can explain it is the night before you're about to get your period, you want things done a certain way. And if they're not done a certain way, you feel like you might kill someone. That might just be me, I don't know. But I would imagine that is very much how a toddler feels at this age and that sensitivity. Because they're just like, this is how it should be. So what can we do as the grown-ups? We need to help them by giving them reasons or options or helping them feel like they're in on the choice, that it's not being put on them, that, you know, they have a voice now and we're going to listen to it. And for me, the few of the main things at this age is, first of all, you have to keep your toddler safe. And just telling them that can sometimes help. It's my job to keep you safe. This is not safe. I have to do this, otherwise I can't keep you safe, and I love you so much. They love feeling safe. Children love feeling like someone wants to keep them safe. That can help a lot of the time. Like, I can't let you sit in the car seat like that because it's my job to keep you safe. This is the way you have to sit in the car seat. So in order for me to keep you safe, I have to do it like this. And they just want to feel safe. So a lot of the time that will work. Then you have options. You can give two choices. You know, they don't want to put on their shoes. You know, they don't like their shoes. Don't listen or interact with that. Just come back with options. You can wear this or that. It's time for you to make your choice. which ones are you going to wear? And you just wait. You're giving them a choice.
I don't like either of those shoes. I want to go on my bare feet.
You don't interact with that. You say, we have to wear shoes. Which shoes do we want to wear? These ones or this ones? Okay, mommy has given you a chance to choose. Now I'm going to count to five. And like this woman says, she doesn't like overpowering her, but you've given her the opportunity for choice. So now you say, well, I've given you a chance to choose. I'm going to count to five. On five, if you haven't picked it yet, I have to. And you have to stick to that. Because if you don't stick to that, the next time it won't work. But if you do stick to that, the next time just saying, I'm going to count to five. And by the time I get to five, it's my choice, will be enough for them to go, oh no, I want to keep in charge of that.
Mm.
And then you have your now and next, which I always go back to. Sometimes, if a child doesn't know what is happening in the day, and we're assuming that they're in tune with us and they just know what we're doing, like, imagine how annoying that is for a kid. They don't know. You have the whole day planned out, but they have no idea. And then you're coming in and saying, okay, we're going to shops in a second. But that's the first time they're hearing out of it, even though you've had the luxury of knowing the whole day that you're going to the shops at this time. I just think we don't tell kids enough. It's really good to inform them the whole time. Right, now you're having your breakfast, but next we're going to the shops. We're going to the shops now, and then we'll be doing this. It's just really nice. It's a now and then or a now and next. Just nice to keep them informed. So all these things minimize the possibility of meltdowns, because they don't feel like they don't know what's going on. Mm. And they just want to feel like they have a little piece of the puzzle in their head.
Probably the biggest meltdown, isn't it? Mm. We're going now.
Yeah, and there's an unfairness to that.
Mm.
Like, you know
you
where you're going.
You do that to me all the time. Like, but I'm watching YouTube.
But there's such an unfairness to it. I really do feel like she says about the reading. Maria Montessori books are very hard to read. They're translated terribly. But if you can get through them, they are the keys to parenting. I've said it before. I went to Montessori College with a girl called Margie. And she wasn't there to be a teacher. She was just there to be a better mom. And there's no way you don't finish a Montessori book and feel like, okay, I completely understand why my kid is doing this. She unlocks the reasons to every child's behavior, and she did it so well that the world is still only catching up with it now. Any new kind of educational things in your school, Maria Montessori got there first.
Is 100 there an years argument, ago. Is there anything to be said for another mass? Is there anything to be said for a timer somewhere in the house, like an egg timer or something?
See,
that, you know,
a
tick, tick, tick.
Timers
are, we got a minute left on this, and when that goes off, we're done.
Timers are great. I love them, but I wouldn't introduce them until they're really needed.
Okay.
Because you always want, like, a timer is great. Some kids do need a timer. They need a visual egg timer. But if that works for you, great. But I would not introduce that till later on. And I hate when a timer is introduced as a punishment.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe in timeouts. And I hate when a kid is given a timer and got told to sit in a chair and wait till they're like...
Loads of your advice, Tina, is like really straight forward. We've always said this, and this has been the feedback, that it's like, well, this is what the kid needs. It's centered around this idea that... you know, listening to the child and being aware of where they're at and what might be impacting upon them. But equally, we get the feedback from people who feel like they've tried everything.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they're doing what they should be doing. Is some of it, like, that you can't really say that the patience that you have with kids, I see your patience with kids is unbelievable. I don't think a lot of people automatically have that level of patience.
Well,
can you build it, or do people just have to switch that in their mind?
It is.
I'm going to need to allow more time.
Yeah, and that's a really, really good question. I mean, definitely doing the podcast, I feel a huge responsibility, because I always feel bad that I'm not in the room. I don't, like, ordinarily, back in the day, I would have gone to the house, I would have gotten to know the child, I'd observe the kid, or if they're in the classroom, I completely know what that kid needs, because I've looked at it and I've seen the surroundings. I am doing a lot of guesswork here with the podcast, but I would never say anything I don't believe in. Now, half the time, when it doesn't work, unfortunately, that is the parent's fault. Because if you're not able to follow through,
right,
It's never going to work. If you're not able to be consistent, it's not going to work. And like, that is not your fault. And that's why I always say, you got to get, before you're about to deal with a behavior, and when you've been given the advice and the tools to do it, don't do it until you're fully committed to it. Because if you start toilet training your kid, and you know that the way to do it is get rid of all the nappies. Well, first of all, check that they're having dry nights. Are they actually ready for toilet training? Have they showed an interest? Then get rid of the nappies. Prepare yourself for a few days of wets. They're not going to get it straight away. How could they? And there's always going to be a wet along the way. But also use the timer. Be consistent. Every single time that works. The only time it doesn't work is when, for whatever reasons, and I completely understand them, because we're all out there trying to survive. It's too stressful. It's causing too much fuss. The nappy goes back on. Disaster. You're left with maybe a few months of trying to figure out toilet training because you didn't do it at the right time. You weren't willing to be consistent. You didn't follow the strict steps, and it has to be strict because you're introducing a brand new routine. It has to be clear what is expected and how it's going to work. I mean, biting, sleeping, all of these things. You talk to any person who's trying to help with a behavior, they're always like, it'll only work. I can only help you if you're willing to do it. If you're willing to follow the steps. Like, I don't even know why parents do it, but sometimes they just can't. They want to do it, but they can't. Because they feel
they get
so
upset.
Bad.
They get upset. Yeah, like even, she said, I feel bad forcing her to do the thing.
Even though I'm never encouraging anyone to be, I don't believe in being negative with a child. Mm. But it's like they think that even following through on something like this, it's the follow through.
Yeah.
Like, Jar, you did it yourself last night.
Yeah.
You did it. And I had to say to Mikey that, you know, your dad's a pushover. Because we had agreed a movie he wanted to watch was not happening.
Yep.
He talked Jarlett into it.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting it. And that was all wrong. But he, you know, for whatever reasons, he got to do it. Now, would I have folded on that? No. You did. Because you couldn't cope with how bad it made you feel.
You're also bringing your own shit to it.
You're bringing your own childhood. Absolutely.
Again, I don't want my kid to have what had happened to me. But like, this is the gig.
Yeah.
You know, the strong and parenting and straight lines and clear boundaries and no means no. And if you tell them this is going to happen if you do that, they feel safer and they feel happier knowing.
And doing this podcast, I get really stressed out sometimes, but I am very shy, modest person.
Tell me about it. It's a fucking nightmare.
But I know, baby to 10-year-old kids, I fully feel confident in that. I know what I'm doing there and I can help you. I adore children. I just want them to be happy.
Yeah.
So I feel happy enough. Like, I know everyone can be wrong and I don't get to see the kids. So I'm always saying, if this isn't right, come back to me. Let's try something else. There's no one fix.
Yeah.
But it does come down to, are you willing to do the work?
Yeah, I got to do the job. We have to do the job, lads. But we're not in it alone. And that's where we started this episode and it's where we'll finish it. You're not on your own. You can email the podcast and we can do our level best to help you with the help of Tina and the community that this has created.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening, for downloading, for recommending, rating, commenting, subscribing, all the rest of it, spreading the word. There's no marketing budget for this podcast. Yeah. It's just you guys telling
people. I also think just the nicest people getting in touch. I mean, it means a lot and we're so grateful. What are we now? 4 years into this?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Massive support. We're so lucky. Yeah. Thank you so, so much.
And we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. I guess we're going to start discussing what this summer is going to look like for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And the challenges that brings. So get your emails in honeyyourruiningourkid@gmail.com. Tina, thank you so much. I love you so much, and we'll see you guys next time.